that behind the scenes and founder generated content, just lean in every single ad, in every single social post and all these things. If I am talking about the product, it's going to perform like 10x better every single time. I can spend $10,000 on a video shoot and I can turn my iPhone around and talk about this new belt. That video is going to do better every single time.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, I am talking to someone with quite an impressive e-commerce pedigree. He really knows his stuff, about how he went about identifying a business to buy, how he bought it, and then the way he put a framework in place to build the success on that business. I know you guys love it when we do a purchase and improve style episode, so this is one of those. He's got some really great insights coming up, and make sure you stick around for the top tips, because his traffic top tip is really good, even if it makes me feel uncomfortable. You're just going to have to listen to it to find out what that's all about. And his book top tip. He's giving us three. There's three book top tips coming up. So make sure you listen right to the end of the episode so you don't miss a thing. And now to introduce our special guest. JM Craddock is the CEO and owner of Lamaterra, a belt brand focused on creating artisanal products that last. Founded in 2012, they now sell via their Shopify site and wholesale channels and are on track for $4 million this year. JM's experience goes much further back, though, as he was the first employee at Chubbies, including a key role in developing the return system that became the very first version of Loop Returns. Hello, JM.
How you doing, Chloe? Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. You have a fascinating history in e-commerce. So how did you end up in the world of e-commerce?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I was in school at college in South Carolina here in the States, and somehow my name ended up on a list of folks for the brand's Chubbies when these guys just started the brand, for like the first ambassadors of the company. As they were starting, they were just taking shorts. If folks don't know, Chubbies is a U.S. brand that sells men's shorts and swim trunks, and that's how they got started. And they are shorter shorts, a little bit louder, loud colors, definitely a good vibe that is connected to them. But the guys were just sending shorts to a bunch of college folks across the country, and I was one of those guys. And fast forward a couple months, I went out to San Francisco to help start their customer service and do some stuff as a summer intern. And we went viral that summer, and I just never went back to school. And just, you know, fast forward 10 years, I know a little bit of things about e-commerce now. It's pretty crazy.
Well, so from free shorts through to an internship that then led to like a full-time job career and everything else.
Yeah, that's it. That's the short story of it. It was a little bit of time in there for sure.
Who knew that ambassador program could lead so far? Very cool.
Yeah. I'm from a small town too, so like it's not something that, you know, people don't go to the big city of San Francisco from where I'm from, you know. And so it was interesting for sure.
Very cool. I'm going to avoid going off on that tangent being from a small town myself. Because this is an e-commerce podcast, not a people going from small towns to big towns and people getting confused by it podcast.
That's a whole nother podcast, honestly.
Yeah, whole other podcast. So, JM, tell us about Lamaterra. Where in the world are you based and where are you selling to?
So we're based just outside of Austin, Texas, in the Texas Hill Country. The town's called Spicewood. The reason we're based here is because 5 years ago, we moved from San Francisco to Texas, and my wife and I just wanted a little bit of space, and so we moved out here to the country, and we actually purchased the business. The business has been around since, you know, around 2012. And we purchased the business 2 years ago. So we kind of like inherited everything, brought it out here. We have a warehouse that's 3 or 4 minutes from our house. And this is kind of where we operate out of.
Wow. So you bought it and relocated it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty remote. Everybody was remote. Everything was in a 3PL. So all the inventory and everything was being, fulfilled and shipped by a third party warehousing group. But my background is operations and fulfillment and logistics. And so I gave those folks a try. They like didn't live up to my expectation just with my exact expertise. And so we just figured we could do it better, honestly.
Well, and your products aren't big products. They don't take up a lot of space, do they? So actually they all fit in a fairly similar size space too. So the simplicity of the physical logistics of a warehouse is a lot simpler for you than it would be for many other businesses anyway.
Certainly. Yeah. And that was one of the findings after purchasing the company that I kind of came up with. I was like, belts are kind of the perfect product. It's like they're low return rates because you can grow and shrink in your belts. They are easy to ship, easy to store. Yeah, all of the above is makes kind of a perfect product to sell.
Yeah, they do. They tick a lot of those boxes of must go through the letterbox, must be low returns, must be not too trend driven. Yeah, very cool. So is that one of the reasons you decided to buy the business? Were you looking for a business to buy?
I was looking. We were lucky enough to sell Chubbies back in 2021. We all made a little bit of cash with that, very fortunately. I parked up that and was planning on either starting a company or buying a company. And I knew I wanted to do that. In the meantime there, I was helping out some friends on the logistics and operations side at a big e-commerce company, ladies e-commerce company called Tuckernuck. I got to the end of 2022 and knew that it was time for me to kind of like spread my wings and fly and help tire replacement, got everybody to a good spot. And then first week of March, departed from Tuckernuck. And then 2 weeks later, La Matera just popped up on a business brokerage site. And he's like, perfect timing, perfect situation. I had randomly already had a La Matera belt. They randomly followed me on Instagram. It was like a bunch of things that popped up that was just kind of like perfect for my kind of like, situation that I was trying to jump into.
So 2 weeks into March and you spot the listing and there's been all these dings going on around you as well. How long did it take until you actually got the keys, as it were? What did the due diligence process look like?
Yeah, it was a fairly simple business because, 93-94% of the business is all e-commerce direct to consumer. And then, 6-7% is wholesale. So fairly simple business, not a ton of assets, just inventory on hand. So it was a pretty quick due diligence process. The thing that took us a long time is we purchased the business with an SBA loan. And so in the States, there's a program called the Small Business Association that allows you to have a backed loan as a new business owner, and it's backed by the federal government. So the federal government kind of takes the risk off of the purchase from the bank. It's still, the loan goes through a bank, but it's just SBA backed. And so, in my opinion, I'm like a huge champion of the SBA program because otherwise, first time business owners, it would be really hard to purchase like a business like we did. But because it goes through the government, it's a full process. There are like many, many hoops and check boxes that you have to jump through and check. That is for sure. But the good thing about the hurdles of that thing is if you can get through it, that means you are very well trusted. And I think their default rate on an SBA loan is like sub 4% or 3% default rate. So they have like a pretty good hit rate. So if the federal government believes in you, you have a good chance to, be successful and keep going,
So I guess it's kind of worth it on two fronts. One, you haven't got a personal guarantee hanging over you, and the risk of losing the
house. There is a personal guarantee attached to it, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there is.
So you still got that, but you do get that benefit of going through with the extra level of due diligence that comes into it all.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the government thinks I'm onto a winner here.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They trust me. So maybe, you know, maybe there's something to this thing.
Yeah. Maybe there's something to this thing. Okay, cool. So your side of the due diligence was relatively straightforward because it's such a simple business, but then you had to wait to tick all the boxes to get the loan in place. So when did you get the keys?
We got the keys end of June. So it's coming up on exactly 2 years.
Wow. And
so it was like a 3-month process, which is actually pretty quick in the process. Because I didn't have a full-time job, I just focused on it like it was my full-time job. So I prided myself on answering every single email from bankers, lawyers, like any of the cats that you're hurting during that time within 5 minutes. So I would just like, if anything came through, it was answered immediately. I was not playing around.
You can almost imagine the lawyers on the other end going, oh no, he's responded fast again.
Literally.
I was hoping I could ignore that till next week, but now I can't. Yeah. Be the lawyer's worst nightmare with speed of response. Always a good move. So presumably because you were unemployed, as it were, at that time, and you were able to focus on this, you must have had a pretty clear idea of what you were going to do the second you got your hands on those keys. It wasn't like oh no, we're here. What am I going to do next? Let's start looking at numbers and build a strategy. You must have been pretty sure on what you were going to do when you got those keys.
Yeah, exactly right. And during that time, you have a lot of free time personally because, you know, bankers and lawyers and all these folks are doing their thing. So I was sitting down during that period and really getting my plan together. And that's whenever I was jumping in, that's whenever I really knew this was the right move and the right business for me, because there was really just three things out the gate that I was like focused on. Number one, I just knew there was plenty of room with margin and margin improvements. And like, I used my Rolodex of factories that I've worked with in the past at some of these recent companies and all that to improve those margins while still focusing on like high quality. That's our like name of the game. Number two was like marketing efficiencies. Most of our channel mix is Facebook, Meta, is probably 75-80% of, you know, where we spend our marketing dollars. And then 25% is through Google. But I knew there was some efficiencies that could be made there. And luckily, like, you know, whenever you're in this game for 12, 15 years, you learn, I'm by no means a marketer, but you meet a lot of good people. And so I was like, all right, I know the exact person that I'm going to like plug into this immediately. And then the last one is just like a little bit, I like to think of it as kind of like the brand soul, to kind of like highlight the soul and just put a little bit of more personality in the brand. And so those are the three things. And that piece on the brand side, I just learned, you know, day one at Chubby's. That's just what we built, is like a very, very like known and like personable brand that people really resonate with.
So nothing... You weren't throwing out the plan. You were just finding the key areas for improvements in margin and profits and growth in terms of same quality product, lower cost, and then improving the performance of those massive ad spends that would have been driving the business, and then making more of the existing brand, I suppose. Amplifying what was already there. Would that be a fair way to put it?
Totally fair. Totally fair. And the former owner, he ramped the brand like very well. Like he like there's no, you know, no harping on what he did. That like I wouldn't be interested in the business if he like didn't have a good business, you know. And so I just knew, and you know, honestly, I got in and, you know, I started implementing this plan and getting it all in place. And then I was kind of looking back and it was like, why didn't this guy like do all of these things? Like, why wasn't it clear? And then like, you know, after kind of thinking through it and, you know, having a coming to Jesus meeting with myself, I was like, oh yeah, like that's just experience. Like I grinded for 13 years to be able to like, you know, pick those low hanging fruits off the tree.
Is that thing like, you've got a squeaky floorboard and the carpenter comes round and he bangs a nail in the right place and it stops squeaking forever and charges you $100 for it. And you're like, that took you 5 seconds. He goes, no, that took me 25 years. It's that sort of thing, isn't it? It's blindingly obvious to you. But then when you look back, you're like, oh, that's why it's blindingly obvious, because I did the hard yards earlier.
Exactly right. I think there's a Picasso story about that as well. It's really good.
I need to learn the Picasso one, because that would make me sound more intelligent.
Yeah. No, that one was a good one. I love that. It's essentially, I'm going to butcher it, but it's essentially one day Picasso was sitting in a cafe or something. He was doodling on a napkin and he like drew this cool thing on a napkin, and a lady walked up and was like, hey, would you mind if I like had that, like kept your napkin? And he was like, yes, it's like $10,000 and you could have it. And she was like, well, you just drew it in like 10 seconds. Like you're going to throw it away. And he was like, no, that took me 60 years. And it was exactly nice. The same kind of like mentality.
Classy Picasso.
Look up the story though, because somebody's told it better than I have.
I will go look that up straight after this. So you knew what you were going to do on day one. You got your excellent ad person in. You switched manufacturing to your new, better suppliers. You started ramping up the brand. Obviously, once you start being there day in, day out, you learn more things. So did you find there were a lot of surprises while you were running through that? Or did your strategy remain pretty much the same for the last 2 years?
Strategy's mainly the same. I would say we were very lucky. We had a couple folks, one factory in Argentina that is like, I mean, Victor is my like main point person down there, and he's the man. And that came along with the business, and like we wouldn't be what we are today without him. And so there were a couple folks. We also had a marketing operations gal that is like still in the business today. And so there are people like that that had that kind of like knowledge of the brand prior to me purchasing it that like are still in today, and they're like epic. They're like so awesome and such good people. And it like makes all this worth it, like in the day to day of, you know, working with those folks. But then supplementing more of my contacts in there is kind of what it's been, you know, kind of built up the brand to what it is today. But yeah, it's the same thing. It's not super complicated and complex. Like, yeah, you're dealing with people and people are complex. And like, I tried to ramp up a factory in Mexico and it's failed 2 times. And I'm like, ah, shit, like, what am I gonna do now? And like, there's all kinds of like, you know, the chaotic, like moving around and running a business. But that's just my game that I like playing. But the fundamentals are like those three things, you know, marketing efficiency, brand, and making sure your cogs are in a good spot.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because quite often you hear of people telling the story of they bought this and they changed everything and it flew. And I love the fact that you went, actually, no, they're doing this well. I just think I can do everything 10% better or 5% better or whatever number that was in your head. But I can see what the fundamentals are. The fundamentals are strong. I know I can improve them. So it's going to be worth investing in this and making this my thing for the next however many years it might be that for.
Totally. 100%.
So clearly the quality and the authenticity of the product is pretty critical for you. On the site today, you have expanded beyond belts. Is that something you chose to do, or is that something the previous owner had done? Is that something you think you might do more of in the future? Because I always think it's, you know, you look at a business that's just selling belts, like, well, there's some obvious other leather goods we could throw in there or something. But there's also the joy of just having that single straightforward product to talk about and explain. So I guess what I'm trying to say, JM, is what's your thoughts on product expansion?
Candidly, I am so torn on this. I know with half of my brain that I should just focus on belts, because there is tons of runway. There are tons of people needing belts. We could not sell enough belts in the next 100 years. But then there's the other piece of me that just likes, I like have shiny object syndrome, and I like to play in a bunch of sandboxes and like, you know. So I like one perfect example is I've got some buddies who own a factory in Thailand that makes nice suits and blazers and all that kind of stuff. So we just came out with a Lama Terra blazer a couple weeks ago. And so completely like not leather goods, not the normal, but it's doing super well. So those types of kind of you know, random projects tell me that, you know, anything that La Matera is going to put out, our customer is going to resonate. It's going to resonate with them. And as long as we like stay true to like our core values, which is, you know, authenticity and quality, like you mentioned, our folks are going to want to purchase like anything La Matera puts out because they know that they're going to get, you know, a really, really like good product. And so I want to be smart with it. Like I said before, belts are the perfect product, like in my personal opinion. But there is a piece of me that likes, it's kind of this idea that La Matera makes the last thing that somebody can grab out of their closet. And so it's kind of that like style differentiator. And so that's why I like, you know, blazers, belts, like I like kind of watch bands. I like, maybe it's a hat of some sort or something like that. And it all kind of ties together. That's kind of my like vision on it, at least.
So we're unlikely to see you doing underwear or socks anytime soon on that basis.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, it's not as interesting. And I don't think I can make a well differentiated product that like is worth putting the La Matera brand on. You know, there are underwear and sock makers out there that do it much better than I ever could.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, it's time for the top tips round. And I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So JM, are you ready for the top tips?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I was telling you before this, I had a really hard problem with this because I'm definitely a book nerd. I read some tangible books, but a lot of it's just audio books that go on in the background that I listen to all the time. So I can't say one, but I'm going to keep it to three.
The audience, what? if you could see the struggle on JM's face as he tries to get it down to three, this is real.
Legitimately. I have a Notion doc that I like, just all of my books that I've almost ever read. But here's my three. So Unreasonable Hospitality. I think as a brand owner focusing on customer, that's such a good book. It's by Will Gadara. He runs some high-end restaurants in New York City, and it's just like a wonderful book. I think I cried a couple times during it because I was so passionate about how like epically they are taking care of like their customers and stuff. So that's one that I always recommend. One that I've read two lately, and so that's why I mentioned these. One was Michael Dell's book, Play Nice But Win. It was cool to hear how passionate he is still to this day, just about the bare bones of what he does. And he's been that passionate since he was 13 or something like that. So that was a really good one. I read that 3 weeks ago for the first time. And one kind of random one that's popped up lately that I just got done reading, I don't know, 2 days ago, was called Don't Tell Me I Can't by Cole Summers. Cole is a farmer, or was a farmer. He started his farm as like a 6 or 7 year old. And he is like an insane businessman, like as a like kid. And it was like, he's from a very poor family. His dad was an injured veteran and all this stuff. He's got like this crazy story, but he was just picking up and like digesting everything from Warren Buffett as like a 7 year old. And it's like, it was wild. Like, you know, unfortunately he like passed away in a freak accident like a couple years ago as a 14 year old, but like, what he did in like his 14 years of life was insane. He was like, I was blown away. The audiobook is read by him. I think it's like an hour and a half long, so super quick read. But I like, after doing that, I was like, I'm getting chills right now just thinking about it. I was like, dude, this is crazy. If my two girls can like grow up just with even a smidge of like, you know, his entrepreneurship mind, I would be like very, well, I'm going to be proud of it regardless, but I would be stoked.
I'm going to have to go and check out that one in particular because it sounds like quite a quick read, which is always good, but it sounds like such an inspiring, mad story.
Yeah. I couldn't recommend it more. It was great.
I think you picked three great ones for us there, JM. So next up, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think it doesn't get the press it deserves?
The one that I prize above all others is, how I'm going to say this is, I don't think I'm good at this, nor do I like doing it, but I think it's like insanely like beneficial for the business. And it's honestly just turning the camera around on yourself and doing founder generated content. I have, you know, badass photographers that do such cool content and lifestyle photo shoot and all this kind of stuff for LaMaterra. And always in every single ad, in every single social post and all these things like that, where you're putting out your brand, if I am talking about the product, it's going to perform like 10x better every single time. I can spend $10,000 on a video shoot and I can turn my iPhone around and talk about this new belt, and that video is going to do better every single time. So that behind the scenes and founder generated content, just lean in. Like, you know, even if you think you're not good at it, I will do it. Honestly, I'll block off like 2 hours in a morning and I'll record the same video probably 25 times before I get one that I like am down for, because I just feel weird and awkward and like, I don't know what it is, but that's my thing. I just like, just focus on it, because people just, I mean, it's just, it goes back to that authenticity. People just want it.
Wow. And you, I think many of us, and I include myself in this, who find creating that type of content difficult, you know, turning the phone around, talking to it, etc. Many of us would go, oh, right, that it's done. Do the one take, get it over with, send it off to someone else to try and make it look good. But you actually spend 2 hours recording it again and again and again to get it right.
Yeah, exactly right.
Wow, that is some investment. It's clear why it pays off so well. Okay, the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I don't have anything like revolutionary here. I think my Notion doc of notes is kind of like my melting pot of ideas and business ideas and all kinds of random things for, you know, the last 15 years. So that thing, I use that most often. And then the other one is just like a messaging app like Slack that allows your team to be all in one place to see everything, what's going on. Those are my two. Notion is, you know, my number one personally. Slack and any kind of other messaging app where you can kind of unite your team, especially if your team is like mine and remote, that's like invaluable.
Love those two. Thank you. The carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Yeah, as I was thinking about this, I was like, you know, I don't really have a good answer for you. And I was like, you know, thinking that I needed to get better. We do things like we have some like green tags on our belts coming from a company called Greener Printer and things like that. But it's not super substantial. But as we were talking, I mean, you gave me this idea, honestly, the longevity of our product. And so I think that was a kind of cool kind of different perspective that I appreciate you giving me. But yeah, the basic principle is, you know, our goal with everything that we make is to have the highest quality and make things that last. And so we're not in the business of, hey, we're going to sell you a belt and we want you to come back and buy it. I would prefer you to buy a different belt in a different style, but you're not going to need to come back and buy that same belt, you know, 2 years from now. But you're, like, it's a belt that is going to stick around, in so much so that we have a lifetime guarantee. Like if something messes up on it or if anything is weird, you send it back to us. We'll either fix it if we can, or we'll send you another one, you know, to replace it. And so I think that's kind of a, you know, epic top tip that I'm going to keep in my hopper going forward.
Well, my pleasure to have helped you with that one, Amanda. But I think it's kind of like the biggest carbon impact of any e-commerce business is the products it creates. And the more those products get used, the lower the impact becomes. You know, if you have a belt you wear once, that's a very high carbon impact. If you have a belt that you wear for 20 years and then pass on to your son, that's a very much lower carbon footprint because it's had all that use of it and it hasn't ended in landfill. So long-lasting products definitely, definitely counts. JM, we are very nearly about to say goodbye. Before we do that, though, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yeah. I'm at lamaterra.com, lamaterra.com. And we're pretty much at Lamaterra on all socials. So yeah, check us out.
Easy as that, everyone. JM, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really fascinating getting to talk and geek out about e-commerce with you. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chloe. Appreciate you.
As you can probably tell, I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with JM. He clearly has a lot of e-commerce knowledge going on and is doing some really great things with Lamaterra. I suppose the really fascinating thing is how he took on the new business that he bought, but didn't rip everything apart. He went, right, these are the three core fundamentals of the business. These are areas where I can make a difference and make an impact. And let's find a way to improve each of those whilst keeping that core part of the brand solid. And I suppose if, like me, you are not the greatest fan of doing founder-derived content, then I think what JM was saying, we really need to do it, people. We really need to do it. It's time to turn the camera on yourself, but make sure you do a good video, not just another video. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to the things we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You could also go direct to the right page by using our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the correct page on the site. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. If you liked this episode, then you can find our other fashion episodes via ecmp.info/fashion, which is where we put all the fashion ones together. And if you liked that story about buying a business and then doing cool stuff with it, then you should really go and check out our recent episode with Scandiborn, which is episode 538, where we are discussing how an existing e-commerce business bought a new business into the fold and the way in which they've built those two businesses together. Really fascinating chat, that one. Well worth a listen. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. We bring you a new interview every single Monday because we want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, someone who should be listening to this, please don't keep it to yourself. Tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.